It also is a check on your own equilibrium. If you find out you did 13 when you were feeling good, and you did only 11 the week after you had a big argument with your wife, your emotions are affected. You must have the same emotional equilibrium when you handicap each time or you're in trouble. That is the big failing of handicappers, is their own emotional equilibrium. The computer has no emotions. What you enter into the computer, if they're reflective of your emotions or your disturbances, are of your fears. If the race, this is one reason we like you to handicap the whole card before you go to the track, if you're emotionally influenced. How do you suppose a man will enter a race after he's lost a race, as opposed to after he's won a race? It doesn't bother us now, Jimmy and I, we just say, oh, that's good, we lost one. That means we're going to probably win the next one. But people who are affected by a loss should have all their handicapping done and should really bet early bird, should bet all at once, get it out of their system. We have one fellow in Los Angeles who, if he loses the first race with a daily double, he's no good for the rest of the day. He goes preserved. If he wins the daily double in the first race, he's good for the day. He doesn't mind if he loses the second and fourth race, but if he loses the first race in the daily double, he is absolutely emotionally shy. I told him, once you bet the ninth race first. That worked for a while. Then he figured out a way to make that disturbing. He bet the ninth race with the exact and everything, and the bat lost. Then he couldn't even go backwards. You are your own worst enemy. We are our own worst enemies, and we all know that. But we are especially our own worst enemies at the track. What the secret is to wake up every morning in the same ego state you went to bed in, to function at the track in the same ego state that you function in at home. You'll know when that funny gurgling is in your stomach and you're doing these strange things. You'll know you did it. Examine yourself. If you can't go to the track and stay in a dull ego state when you're there, practice it until you can. Don't make a bet in a state of anxiety, unless you just want to play around. But don't think that you're a professional or have the opportunity to be a professional or are taking up that opportunity if you cannot go to the track and use it as an office. That's why I don't like the track in California, because I'm very sensitive to noise, shoving, parking lot attendance. You know, I know my weaknesses, and numbers used to blur. I'd get the horses and I'd see nines and sixes and what have you. So I don't bet big money at the track. That's my Achilles heel. Not because it upsets my judgment, it upsets my vision. I don't see the thing. That's why I drew compigraphs, so there would be no doubt about reading numbers. I can hardly read numbers even when I'm in an adult ego state, much less when I'm threatened. But in Vegas, that's my forte. Off-track betting may be yours. I can go to Las Vegas, sit on a horse room, make 20 bets a day, win 17 of them without any emotion. I go to a track, all I can wait, when are we leaving? That's all I can think of. Let's get out of this jungle. So I don't make large bets at the track. But I can do very well off track. So if I lived in New York, man, I'd love it. I have fun at the track now, picking the pace horse. I just tell them, who's going to place? It's a show-off thing. And these guys pick winners. I pick the pace horse, and we get the exact. But I cannot function as make a living at the track, because it seems ridiculous to me to sit there for 5-6 hours to make 4 or 5 wagers. When you're in Vegas, you can sit there in one day, you can do a week. That's personal. But I do know what my personal problems are and how I respond, and I don't go against them. So know what yours are. Where do you panic? Where don't you panic? Which brings us to money management. What is your comfort level? A man says, I want to make $3,000 a week. Well, you know, to make $3,000 a week, you're going to probably have to bet $3,000 a week. Not all at once, but you're going to have to bet just about as much as you make. What's your comfort level? Where do you freeze? Where do you panic? Now, quite specifically, if you cannot make a living on $300 bank, you shouldn't be in this business. The man who says you need $5,000-$10,000 is a man who also will tell you that everyone should expect 17 or 18 losses in a row. Sir?
Did you ever have a discussion with Dick Mitchell over that $10,000 bank?
Well, he's changed. He says 300 now.
He does?
Oh. Yeah, he does seminars with me. When people do seminars with me, they either are converts or I don't do them. I won't sit around with somebody who tell. I told him that, Dick, you're absolutely one of, and he agrees he's wrong.
He's got it in his books.
Sure he does. Well, he wrote his books before he met me.
Yes.
He wrote his books before he started winning. Naturally. Dick Schmidt helped him write them.
Yeah.
Oh, he's all right. He really believed. He wasn't lying. He believed. You know who told him? Jim Quinn and Andy Beyer, they believe it. Why? Because Andy Beyer will go out and bet $5,000 in a race. If he loses, it means nothing. He needs $20,000. He does not play percentage of bankroll. Jimmy Quinn does not play percentage of bankroll. These men, they have such confidence in their own intellect that they say, I can tell you which race I should put a heavy bet on and which race I should put a light bet on. I can't do that. Mr. Kelly can't do that. I don't believe they can do it. I've seen their action. They when they guess wrong and they get $5,000 on it, that's not very good. You know, when they guess right, they got 200, just like you and me. The only way to do it is to be able to take a small bank and bet small and let the wagers you make and the money you make increase your bankroll. And it's called the Kelly Criterion. And you can write books and you can call yourself Dr. Z, or you can call yourself Dick Mitchell, or you can call yourself anything else. It's still the Kelly Criterion. The value of having men who are good lecturers like Dick talk about it is that they infuse it with their own humanity. Dr. Z is a lovely man. I was his guest and did a seminar with a wonderful man, but he is living in such an ethereal intellectual academic world that what he proposes is totally impossible in reality. Can you imagine yourself sitting around betting $500 to make 20 cents on the dollar or 20 cents on $2? He and Thorpe will do it, apparently, at least they talk about it, but I won't, and I don't think you will either. So you've got to say, hey, read these books, they're wonderful. But are you going to really do that? Anything you're not going to really do, chalk that up to intellectual reading. I mean, I'll read St. Thomas Aquinas too, but I'm not going to be a follow his philosophy. I'll go to Burt Main's church, but I'm not going to become a Presbyterian. What you have to do is simply this. You hear that?
I heard it. The rich dad and the great book of Mormon.
Bertie wants to go. Dick Schmidt wants to go to Burt Main's church. Listen, finding a decent Christian in this society is really something. That's like that. What they've done with Lamb.
Yeah. I have some announcements
after. I knew you would. Preachers, you never notice, they've always got announcements.
Not after today's sermon.
He comes in with a collection plate. The plate
is not full.
Yes. We got to cut the sermon short this morning because post time has moved up to half an hour. So let's pass the plate now.
Right now, it should be in the middle of a sermon. So this is the first Sunday I've missed in 18 months, and it feels very strange. So you're lucky you're not getting any more than a few announcements.
He'll quote him. He'll leave something in. You watch him. Quite simply, you do it this way. Get all your gambling out of your system first. Get your idea that I'm going to take a flyer here. When you were ready to stop taking flyers and ready to make some money, set a goal. Say, listen, I haven't got out of my system yet. It's like getting married. I've got a few blondes I haven't yet. Right after that, honey, we'll get married. Set a date. Make a target date. That's more important than setting goals for yourself. Set a target date. When am I going to get serious? The time to get serious is when you know you can do it 60% even, consistently. Not once, but consistently. You know how much money you can make on 60%? You can make as much money playing 60% with a percentage of bankroll as the 80% guy can betting haphazardly. More. You start with a $300 bank. You put $200 of it in your hip pocket or at home at the chest. You take $100 with you. Your first bet is $6 and $4. The guy says, well, 6 and 4 is good. 6 and 40 is better. No, it is not. Because you lose 60, 40, you say, ah, hell with it. I'll buy Mike Warren's next. How many people who are seriously using their math have lost more than three in a row? You're not going to hurt. Well, you would. I mean, you darn foreigners, you come down here. But how many have you lost? I'm serious. I don't care if you lost. Since you've been seriously applying now. How many? More than three, but how many? What's your longest losing streak? Four, all right, that's good. You read your lines just like we rehearsed it last night. We've never met before, nothing up our sleeve. No, four. We did some seminars with Mitchell. Mitchell would get up and ask this question. I opened this can of, and the biggest we ever had was four in a row. How many of you who are playing, he's playing in Canada, and he doesn't have he has one track a year and when it's open. I love Canada, and I would become a Canadian myself, except for the fact that you have to come down here to play the horses most of the year. Now, how many of you have lost more than three in a row? Who haven't? Well, you haven't had it that long.
Yeah.
How many of you lost in a row?
I've lost five.
Five?
Yeah.
Banished him.
Yeah.
We did not rehearse that. But five in a row you have lost.
Yeah.
How long have you been using it?
I was just goofing off.
You were goofing off. I didn't ask you what you did goofing off. I asked you what you did using the method.
When I started using UltraScan, I didn't understand when to use the yes or no, when to use the
adjustment. Okay, well, there's ways to lose, but I'm talking about when you finally overcome the hump, when you finally really fall into a pattern of with the method, you find that for anybody lost who had cycles who really knows how to do it, how about you? You're pretty good. What's the most you've ever lost?
Five.
That's the most you've ever lost. Okay. How about you over there? You're a bright guy. He's quite your IBM computer. What's the most you ever lost in a row? You got the handle. Four. Four is about maximum for a fellow who has a handle who's not just haphazardly.
I have to qualify that. I started doing this 3 months ago, and it was kind of like out of order, you know, somehow, I don't know how this happened, but somehow I got the phase three disc before I even got the yellow manual, and somehow tried to figure out how to use the phase three disc without the yellow manual, and then I just got 2 weeks ago the documentation on the program from Dick Schmidt, so I wasn't even sure how to use the Behrman program.
So I was just struggling through, and still it was only five in a row. So. Yeah, you know, this is the same thing that happened to me when I first read that yellow manual and tried to apply it to this program. I'm like, the more I talk, the same language. And I tell you, even back then when I was still in London, I didn't really go down to use that day.
You know what is known as left-handed testimonials. That it works, but why in the hell didn't you send me the right material? That's because Purdy wouldn't read the manual. He just said, he makes the program without reading the manual. Blame Purdy, get Purdy. But anyhow, four is about getting to the point of the issue. What's the fellas up here?
Well, what's, I had a five race run out once, but that's after I had tinkered with the program so that it bore no resemblance to what the program was that Howard had sent me. That was the worst experience that I had with the methodology. But since I've been on the, well, I can tell you, since I started, since the last seminar in Baltimore, since I started playing Ultra very seriously, very carefully, and learning and using it exactly as is set forth in the manuals and pursuant to Howard instructions, I've had two runouts of three races.
Purdy's never lost more than one in a row, but since he had his entire bankroll on it, it was a disaster.
You know, I had called you up about a month and a half ago, Doc, and my losses were outrageous because I was putting the wrong horses at the computer. I wasn't coming down with
them. Yeah, that's why I qualified. I said, after you got the handle on how you're doing.
And the only thing I can say is if your percentage is down, you better find out where the horses are coming from, because if you're putting the wrong horses in there, bro, you're in trouble.
Yeah, but since you got it down to five horses, what's your biggest, longest loss streak?
Well, if I play the top, you know, if the short odds horse, if I play him for place and play your schedule, I got it right here. it's fantastic. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not trying to get people to give me big song and dance endorsements. I love them, of course. but The longest losing streak, if you're halfway proficient with the method, the longest losing streak you're going to get is going to be four. Not by my longest losing streak, I expect, is three. Same with the fellas here. Jimmy Bradshaw, two, is pretty heavy. He draws when he gets two. There's something wrong here.
There's one thing wrong with the methodology is that I started to win good. And you know something, I began to think I could walk on water, and then I got careless as hell. That's when I lost 6 times. That's where the problem comes, because when you're winning real good, you actually think, well, nothing can go wrong, I can do everything right, and then you get careless.
What lesson did you learn from that?
Not to get careless.
Yeah, well, so the methodology just taught you that.
That's right. That's real. Making a regression model on myself and not be stupid. And boy, I can do anything.
You're going to have to lose some weight to walk on water anyway.
You keep playing off the stand about the third time you can do it.
Wow. Wow, that there now.
I was never so embarrassed in my life as when I fell in that pool in Washington, D.C.
You were halfway across.
All right, the point of it is that your losses, your number of losses in a row that you can anticipate with even moderate proficiency are so minimal as to not to get you excited. When you listen to the experts, and I'm talking about nice guys and decent men and intelligent men, I'm talking about James Quinn, I'm talking about Andy Beyer, I'm talking about your friend, who says you have it. They all say that you should expect runouts of 17 or 18 in a row, and you must have a bank to compensate for it. Mitchell used to say that because when we first met Mitchell, he was having runouts of 17 and 18 in a row. Why? Because he was betting the overlay. These men who are intelligent men will sit up and tell you, unless you get them trained otherwise, that you are better off in the long run betting the overlays than you are betting horses that pay 3 and 4 to 1. In the long run. Have you ever known a mathematician who didn't say in the long run? You don't live long enough for that long run. Yeah, well, watch it too. You'll be dead, right? Hey, a handicapper, let me tell you, I know a lot about handicappers. They're fragile people. They're like leaves, very sensitive leaves, and the breeze will rustle them, get them one way, and they hold on to the branches and cling with dear life. They're very easily influenced by anything negative. You show me a handicapper who's winning, and I'll show you a man who's as loyal and go to the ends of the earth for you. Shook in four losses in a row, and he's reading, and he's asking the other guy, what method are you using? We got guys who, when they win with Scott. When they lose with us. You've got to stick to your method. I don't care whether it's ours or not, but whatever you're using, you got to stick with it. You can't be trying something new or changing your program. In the long run, you must not lose over four in a row with any degree of consistency. If you just count it up mathematically, if you never lose over four, and you are going to have streaks of at least four that you win in a row. That is a mathematical certainty, too. If you lose four in a row, you're going to win four in a row. So if your cycle was even 60-40, you would make a lot of money playing Kelly by the natural winning result of losing four in a row. So if you can do even 60%, you can make yourself all the money you'll ever need by starting with a bet of $6 and $4 and playing 10% of bankroll 60-40. 60 on the low odds horse and 40 on the high odds horse. People play around with this, people come up with alternatives, but none of them work as well as that. Playing 60-40 starting with a $4 bet, you don't even know what a $4 bill looks like. I'm talking about real people now, not you plungers.
Can you say something about odds too, or are you going to get to that?
All right. Yeah, I'm going to say something about odds. The reason you go 60-40 is you can make a bet on an even odd horse and make two units. If you have three units on a horse that pays $4, you've got $6 on it. That's three. You're going to have four or three times, which is 12. Your bet is 10, you make $2, or if you're up in the 200, you make 200. You can make money on even odds horses. Hey, you go to Aqueduct certain times of the year and $6 and $8 mutuals are all you're going to get. Not because, the guy says, I only want long shots. I've seen weeks at Hollywood Park with short fields where you never got a long shot if you waited for those 2 weeks. And the fellow who's playing the long shots during those 2 weeks is stroking himself because they don't come in. Everybody else is collecting 680. I wouldn't take 680 with your money. That's stupid, anybody would take 680. And that same guy has got a stock market thing that's paying 7% a year and he thinks he's a wise investor. I got a utility. They said, boy, you were right to buy that utility for $17,000. It's up to $32,000. You're getting 9% a year on it. I said, you think that's good? You ought to see the fifth race here. Hey, you know how fast you will double your bankroll? You and Maul got enthralled with what we were doing since we stole about half of them. Yeah, anyway, you should have. He came to one of our seminars. I say that, but I don't want anyone else to say that. No, we did get a lot of this from Huey Maul. With his blessing, he said, carry the ball. Huey Maul, in my estimation, is the greatest mentor in this business alive today. Before him was Matheson and Talbot. They gave us a lot. But Huey said, that he did one of our seminars with us. He went back and he said to some people, send me your picks. He said, don't have the Sharpies send me their picks. Some of you fellows live around Vegas, just give me your picks every day and I will see what you should be doing. So he took some fairly mediocre handicappers in our group, 63%ers, 65%ers. And he found out that playing 60-40 with a 10% of bankroll, they doubled their bankroll every 19 plays. These are mediocre players. Jimmy doubles his bankroll every 3 plays because he plays the exotics. Some of us will double it every 4 or 5. The average should be between 14 and 17. That's each cycle. Within each cycle, you'll double your bankroll. So you start with a $100 bankroll, and so it's 5 days later, you only got $200. Now don't spend your bankroll on things like rent and food. That's ludicrous. Your bankroll is designed as an investment bankroll. What you buy your food and pay your rent with is secondary. That comes somewhere else. Because you'll never get enough money to pay your rent and food from horse racing unless you have an investment bankroll, purely for your investment. Not for your programs, not for your car, your gas, and all that stuff. I'm talking about what's your investment. Hey, when you invest $10,000 in the stock market, you don't say, I have to add $14,000 for rent and gas and phone calls to my broker and everything. I'm usually holding people in absolute spellbound. But when you see when it's before racing, what takes precedence? Yes, ma'am. Even.
What's the second one?
Second lowest?
Well, with your even odds, your even
odds. Oh, it doesn't matter. Anything over even will make you money. Not much.
So you would play a 5-2 and a 1-2?
Sure. I'll play anything that's got four legs. I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I do that. Very simple. And I know a lot of people who hold out for odds. But when I started in Las Vegas, they did not give you anything but the morning line. There were no televised, and there was no second line. In Mexico, they give you a second line, but it's not accurate. It's just to lure you in. There's no way of telling the odds when I started. I would find that every time I would lose money on a race because the odds went down, I would win money on another race because the odds went way up. 2-to-1 horses sometimes paid $14. 5-to-1 in the morning line paid $4.80 or $3.60. You play in volume and you'll win in volume and you will never notice those races. The fellow who says to me, I can't play anything under 3-to-1, it's a losing proposition. It's not good enough ROI. It's a man who's just giving himself the excuse to put off the discipline. You will make money on $6 mutuals.
I represented for a while a major, I was one of the a number of attorneys for a major bank's trust department. Where if they made 5% a year, they were thrilled beyond belief. Okay. If you bet into a situation, you're betting 60-40, your one horse is even money, your second horse is 5-to-2, and the even money horse wins, you've just made 20% on your investment. That's great. If the other horse wins, you make 40% on your investment. Now, it doesn't seem like much, and when you walk away from the window with $12 back, from the $10 you bet, it just says, oh, it's going to take forever. But when that is compounded into a cycle and into 20-20 race cycles, the results are just, they get astronomical.
I'm going to ask a question. Once you master this, like you say, your losing streaks are not that far apart, like you've been doing 4 or 3 or whatever it may be. I've been using a 10% Kelly freeze. Am I too bold by using that?
Let's talk. No, 10% of $1,000 is certainly too high, but 10% of 100 is minimal. Keep your bank, keep it at 10%. The reason I say 10% is it's optimal is 16, but 10% is so easy to figure.
No. What I meant was, you start with $300 bank. Now I know that on $300, I got 10 bets there, and according to...
You're not upping it after each win.
No, I go up, but I don't come down. No. In other words, I can stay at that level for 10 bets.
Uh-huh.
And if I made the first bet, and I say I won $50, now my bank is $350. So I bet at that level, $35, for 10 bets. If the very next bet I go up for another 10 bets. Is that too dangerous? Or?
If it's not, if you don't abuse your comfort level, if you don't reach a level where you have fear in doing it,
well,
that's fine. I always say bet a fixed minimum, Kelly. Anyway, never bet lower than your fixed minimum. And if you're fixing your minimum at each level, that's fine, so long as you maintain your cycle, never have more than 4 losses, you will never have any problems. Just, you know, there's no reason for you not to do it. Once you've now overcome your problems.
Yeah,
Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no, we got money. Thank you.
You talk about the Kelly formula. The one that's in the yellow manual, that's what you mean, if we follow those instructions?
Yeah, the Kelly formula is very simply betting a fixed percentage, a given percentage of bankroll. The Kelly formula, of course, is to determine the amount of bankroll by your win proficiency. If you really play your Kelly optimally, you'd be paying 20 to 30% of your bankroll initially with a 60% edge. That's a 10% edge on the game. You'd be at 10% in proficiency, but your 10% of your mutual, which is minimal about 840, it gets up to be about a 60% Kelly. So all we say is play a fractional Kelly, which is 10%, because it's so easy to figure. Huey Moss said we should be playing at least a 16%. Purdy plays a 20%, and that's why he's reaching for the mic.
What Howard's telling you about 60-40, believe me, you're not my children, but I'll tell you the same thing I tell my kids. Do as I say, not as I do. Okay? I don't play the races on a regular basis. Most of these people know it. When I go to have fun. Okay? Maybe 3 times a year, 4 times a year. Okay, so I'm out there for entertainment. If you're serious about making money at the track, 60-40 is the way to go. I know all the guys in California that play this method, that use 60-40, and they're all winners, and they're all taking down profits on a regular basis. So, he's right. I mean, I've seen the guys do it, and I've watched them do it day after day after day.
That's 60-40. 10% of your
10%
bankroll.
If your bank is 40, bet is $10, you put $6 on the low odds source and $4 on the high.
What I wanted to make a comment to this gentleman here, he asked the question about 10% raise or whatever it is. Take a 20 raise cycle that you actually bet that way and see what your profit was. And then go back and do it with a 16% minimum bet. In other words, whatever your minimum bet was to start with, 16% of 300, whatever that is. Okay, and then just using a calculator, figure out what the return would have been betting 16% as you went along on the increased bankroll. See which one gives you the greatest amount of return without giving the losses, and if it fits your comfort level, whichever can give you the most profit without making you nervous about the size of bet that you have, go with it. Maximize your return at your comfort level.
I did that. The freeze makes more money, but the thing is, if you lose 10 in a row, that's it. Well, you shouldn't lose 10.
No, you shouldn't lose 10 in a row. If the freeze makes you more money, then that's the one you should notice.
If I went into a 5-level loss, then I would drop into the Kelly movement, where it was very good.
If after each loss you know why you lost, you should never have more than 2 in a row, really.
A lot of the people in California that play the 60-40 play that way because they started as novices. I mean, they didn't know one end of the horse from the other. And the 60-40 got them going, kept them going. And they're comfortable with it. They could probably figure out a way to maximize more return or whatever. They're already set in their ways and they're winning. And that's important to them. That's why they stay with it.
Well, I'm using 60-40.
I understand. If you want to make the changes, just verify it for yourself that it works. Whatever works best for you, works. I'm saying 60-40, you're never going to get hurt on 60-40 in front of banker.
Doc, can I make a statement about the people who might want to wait for odds higher than 2-1? I did a 20 race cycle for Doc Sarton in Chicago. And I found my win percentage in the 20 race cycle playing all odds was 75%. And just for the sake of argument, I did another calculation on the other side of the same page to show what the results would have been had I bet horses 3-1 and higher. And what I found out was you're gonna have to be satisfied with a lower win percentage if you want a higher average mutual. My win percentage dropped from 75% to 62%, waiting for horses 3-1 or higher. The average mutual went up quite a bit, but some people want high average mutuals and high win percentage too, and I don't think you can have both of them.
That's
equating for three to one on both horses? Or are you playing two horses?
Right, 60-40 on two horses. High odds, low odds.
Minimum 3-1. In a long run, if you, yes, doctor.
When do you increase your bet from $6 to $4?
At the track, after each, you never go beyond the fixed minimum. You stay at the fixed minimum. You go with your bank thereafter. After each race, if in increments of a dollar rise.
10% of your new bankroll.
10% of your new bankroll.
You add the profit. If you won the 6-4, you've now got $110. Now, what are you doing at?
You bet $11, 6 and 5.
On whatever.
Yeah, whatever that turns out to.
I'm betting 10% of my existing bank. Now, in Las Vegas, where the races overlap, I play a five-race cycle. I bet the same thing on five races, then I take my results after the five and then up it. Because you can't do it after each race there.
What happens if you lose?
You stay at fixed minimum.
You don't go below the $10 bet.
You don't go below the $10. That's
six
the minimum
and four.
Bet.
I see.
That's always your bet. That's it.
What do you do with odds on horses? If you had one as an odds on horse, the other as, say, 5-1.
I'll take even odds. If I have to, even odds will make you money at 60-40. Under even odds, and I bet them to place.
You bet the
no odds
horse to place. Uh-huh. If I got
a bet at all.
What do you do with a higher odds horse? Bet that
regularly. Bet it regularly. We also have strategies for splitting the bet to win in place to those who don't want to lose those marvelous place opportunities. But the essence is, what we're saying now is, before we get into those what we call portfolio type of wagers, is to just bet to win until you've got that rhythm down. Just do play a Kelly to win only. Sure, if you're going to, I have to play to place because I'm going to make more money getting those higher horses than I want to give up. So I have what I call a portfolio bank. I have a 5% of another bank for just for places. And I have 6% of another bankroll for Quinellas. Because Quinellas, the minimum price for a three-horse Quinella is $6 in Las Vegas. And that's my speculative bank, my Quinella bank. And they all work, and it's like keeping a portfolio in your stock market. You say, well, this bank's doing real good, this one needs a little replenishing. Yes, sir?
I'm just curious, when you use the whole spectrum of the odds, from even money on up, what kind of average mutual, can you expect over there?
My average mutual, most of us, I'll let them speak for themselves. My average mutual off track is 11-20. My average mutual at track is, this last cycle, and we've had some very low odds days, is 9-40. The Brohammers, I can tell you right now, is 9-60, but he has 80% of his wins at 9-60.
It's irrelevant anyway, you have to take what you can get. There are periods of time at Santa Anita where you're dealing with low odds horses on a regular basis. You just have to take and go with it.
No, I understand that. I just was curious about the mutual.
Yeah, they end up if you play in volume, you get a higher mutual. Because you can play tracks where you know where they aren't suffering from this low mutualitis, like Hawthorne. Hawthorne's a big payoff track, essentially. So, in Vegas, you get a higher mutual. At the track, you take what it gives you. So our track mutual odds is down under $10 now, but higher than 9. Or off track, it's closer to 11 to 12 in that area. It stays that way. It has been year in, year out. Some of the people who get mutuals in the $8 to $9 range are people who eschew long shots. They say, hey, oh, that horse, look, he's 20 to 1, he can't possibly win. I must have made a mistake. That's the worst mistake you can make, is thinking you made a mistake when the method picked you a long shot and not betting it. And a lot of people do that. Oh, I also can't say that horse is number one, he's 40 to 1. I can't, I won't play that horse. That'll kill you. Start off with a one bankroll to win until you got that rhythm. The toughest thing about playing a Kelly criterion is starting it. Took me years to start it. I'd go up there and I'd come home and tell my wife all the races I won. How much money did you win, dear? My wife, for a nice, sweet lady, she gets right down to the nitty-gritty. Well, $12. You mean you've been gone for 5 days, and you were at that hotel, and you bought all that chicken, and you... I bet you're out drinking every night. You and the boys down there, supposed to be scientists doing research, you were just down there drinking and chasing those girls, weren't you? $12.80 for a week? No, thank goodness. You bring anything back with you? No, I hope not.
Getting back to your philosophical part here, where you were talking about how much did you make, you know, your wife is guilty of that, so a lot. You know, when you come home from the track, they want to know how much you made, and you got to sort of buttress yourself against that a little bit.
Well, I got a solution for that.
Mine spent a lot of time in the cast.
The first thing you must do is to give your wife a $50 bill. Or a $100 bill if you're getting really, you know. If you give it away, I told John Nick to do this when he was having problems, and I said it right in front of his wife. I tell all clients to do that. Give you, I don't care whether it's a 20 or it's a token, whatever it is. If your wife gets up there where she thinks $100 is like 10, you got to give her 100. But keep her, you know, a little barefoot and don't let her know about it. You get away with maybe 10 or 20. But you've got to give something. If you expect to be a winner, you got to function like a winner. And a winner walks up and hands his wife a, and of course you ladies now, this is equal society. You're the handicapper, give your husband something. Give him a little sum.
Wait till I go get one.
Yeah, tell her.
Doc, I made the mistake of telling Joanne about this that you said. I thought that was very cute, and so I told her that. And every now and then, I'll be working away, she'll come in and say, "How you doing?" I'm just hoping that there'll be a $50 thing in it for her.
And it's not, you know, it's not lying. I mean, we talked about Dixit's lie three. If you have your records and you show you have a proficiency, you have your, you know what your average mutual is, you have a stack of 20 race cycles, you know what you can expect day to day out. A day that you kind of, you know, grind and don't do very well, you have three races, two of them win at very low odds, and the third one loses, that happens. And the bankroll neither goes up nor down too much. And someone says, well, how did you do it? Well, if you say, look, I made $2.80 today, that's what you're wasting your time for. But if you look at it in the big picture, you can truly say, it's winning day.
They don't have to ask much of the time. They didn't come home and say, I know you lost today.
One day out in Las Vegas with Howard, I came in after the results of about seven or eight different races were in. Howard's sitting there with his head down, looking. I said, I'm not even going to ask. I think out of those seven races, I think you missed one exotic, and had all the rest of them. But I can't tell. I can't tell from Jimmy. I can't tell from Howard. Bobby, I can tell. But whether there's win or loss, because there's that kind of equanimity that comes along and just.
I got one more story about wives. Last year, we decided to take a vacation. We hadn't been on one for about 5 years, so we put some money aside for a cruise for the wife and I and both the kids. Put it in a separate account so it couldn't be bothered. And then along came a double carryover at Santa Anita.
A what?
About $600,000 in the pool, and I wanted all of that. So I decided to go for it, and I didn't tell my wife. I just went down to the bank and got a sizable chunk, all of it. Went to the track, put in a huge pick six ticket, and had four wins.
Did that count?
Did not count. I only paid for six or five for the consolation. But I didn't go home and announce this to her. I went, got some more money, went back to the track the next day, and did very well. Came home and I gave it to her all in $100 bills. I said, now take this and put it in the bank.
She said, which account? I said, the one I took it out of.
Why you do that to me, Bobby?
You see any doubters up here, Bobby?
You see anyone that doubts that story? If you behave like a winner, you will end up as a winner or you'll end up dead. I had a good friend once, and they said of him on his tombstone, he never was a millionaire, but he always lived like one. If you, in his philosophy was, his philosophy for his entire life, 38 years, was if you impose upon yourself a sufficient amount of obligations and run up enough debts, you will have to somehow find the money to pretty kind of reminds me of this fellow. You will find a way to make it, or you go to the contemporary debtor's prison. But if you treat your spouse as a winner, then you will have overcome the main problem of horse players. All wives, all spouses, whether it be, and it's tougher for men to take a wife who's a gambler than a wife to take a husband who's a gambler. Gambling is a sexual threat. Gambling is a mistress of which whom most wives are jealous, and is a lover whom most husbands cannot tolerate. That's why the only couples who do this well are those who do it together. When one of them doesn't, the other doesn't, there can be some great jealousies because it is a sexual substitute if you let it become. Most men who belong to mommy, the wife they use as their mother substitute, and they are nurtured to her breast, and after she balls the hell out of them, she says, that's all right, oh, poor baby, you can't help it. She loves him because he's a loser, because that is her hold on him. That was mommy's hold on us. We were a poor, defenseless little kid. Don't grow up, son. Don't go out and face the world, because I will lose you. That's why some fathers don't like their kids to date until they're 31.
This is the end of the tape.